Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Kozura, always lit, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 103. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Kozura, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here on this Monday, Steelers Nation. And it was March Madness for college basketball as our brackets are getting ready. But it's been a March Madness for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, Dave, we had our emergency podcast over the weekend to talk about Justin Fields being acquired by the Steelers in that Saturday evening slash night trade. Kind of react to that today. Some more cap news, reworking of cornerback Dante Jackson's contract. So still plenty for us to discuss.
Oh, absolutely. Happy Monday to everybody. And if you're, boy, Duquesne, what about Duquesne, huh?
Yeah, go Dukes, an attorney.
Yeah.
Good no pit, though. That hurt.
Yeah, that did hurt there. So, we obviously, here we go again. A lot to talk about, and really in a positive aspect regarding the Steelers. And where would you like to start this morning?
Let's start with the most immediate piece of news that came out Monday morning. The Steelers have restructured, reworked, you can explain it better than I can, the contract of Dante Jackson, the player acquired from the Carolina Panthers in that Deontay Johnson trade. Dave, you had speculated they could be doing something with that to reduce his cap charge for 2024. So walk us through that situation.
Yeah. Look, I mean, this is nothing but good news here when it comes to what is, you know, what we thought might happen with his contract there. This is a guy that was originally the cap number with him was coming in over like, you know, what, $10.5 million upon arrival. We were waiting to see what would happen because he had that $4 million roster bonus due on the 16th. And immediately, you know, you kind of look at that, where the placement was in the APY hierarchy, and it didn't look right. And you kind of wondered if there'd be some contract manipulation there. And it got manipulated for sure overall there. His new deal essentially totals out at $6 million in total. The Steelers hate having those workout bonuses and per game roster bonuses in there. So those were kind of, those were worked out as part of this redo, if you will. Long story short here, they're saving, what did I say the savings was in here? Hold on a minute here. I'll get it, the total here exactly for you. But his total cost is going to be $6 million. And mm-hmm. all told, the cap savings are $4.5225 million with him. So that's the long and short of it. And, you know, I had tweeted out, you know, not long after they acquired him, that I think the best thing to hope for here is maybe Dante Jackson agreeing to nix his $4 million roster bonus so that he could get traded and possibly not released, and maybe his per game, you know, roster bonuses as well. And that, you know, we should know sooner rather than later what the result of that, you know, is. And essentially, you know, that's what happened here, Alex. I mean, you get a, you know, four and a half, you know, look at it this way too. You know, they were on the books to pay Deontay Johnson $10 million in cash in 2024, and now they're on the books to pay Dante Jackson $6 million in cash. So you get a $4 million cash savings, you know, as a result of the trade, and obviously you swap players and the picks and all like that were involved there. But this is really, when you look at, you know, his Dante Jackson's, you know, history and injury history and all like that. This is kind of really what his worth is, $6 million. So that will be kind of his new APY. It looks a lot better when you look at that thing in the hierarchy of the Steelers contracts at this point. So, you know, good news. I mean, you get cap savings there, you get cash savings there. And now, because of what he's at, if you look at this overall, this does not prevent you from going out and maybe adding another cornerback here in free agency, either one that plays outside or one that plays in the slot, or who knows, maybe one of each here, because this room could still need some help prior to the draft here. So that's the long and short of it. Long story short, you know, kind of what we thought might happen there.
Still a free agent after this season, is that accurate?
Right, right. Okay. And if he leaves, then he should, you know, depending obviously of what he would sign for somewhere else and all like that, should qualify as a compensatory free agent a year from now if indeed he leaves and signs for a night, you know, obviously all that depends on value of contracts and all like that. But we'll worry about that a year from now.
Right. And I know it's in the post, people can check out on the site, but where does Pittsburgh now sit at, you know, available cap space wise after this restructure reworking of the Jackson contract?
Yeah. When you look at it as of Monday morning, now we're still waiting for specifics when it comes to the contracts, the 1 year contract of Van Jefferson and what was it, a 2 year deal on Deshaun Elliott. But we did have the total 2 years of the Deshaun Elliott contract to at least work with there. And once again, the Van Jefferson contract should be easy to narrow down because that's likely to be a veteran benefit contract. So I'm working under approximations on both Van Jefferson and Deshaun Elliott. I don't imagine my approximations are off much here, but I've got them roughly the team right now, today in real time, and this is everything included. This is Justin Fields after the trade, after the Kenny Pickett trade, after everything right now in real time. I have this team at 15.153, almost 15.154 million under the cap as we sit here right now. I would like to think that maybe there's you know, at a max, 250,000 of margin of error to either side of that. That gives me a little room to play with overall if I miss on the Van Jefferson and Deshaun Elliott contracts there. But that should be a very good rough approximation, 15.154 million under the cap at this time. And obviously, you know, look, I mean, when you look long term, you know, past free agency and on into the offseason, yeah, the team has, you know, what I would consider, what, 18 point something million dollars worth of 18.3 and roughly estimated forthcoming cap charges that they'll still have to accommodate for. But as we talk about several times, there's lines and they're lines in the sand when it comes to, you know, things that you have to account for throughout the offseason. And right now, all this team's worried about is functioning space within free agency. And at 15.154 million under, that's plenty to work with right now for the remainder of free agency here. They'll worry about creating the cap room for the other forthcoming costs later on down the road. Can, you know, once again, you can extend Cam Hayward, no new money in 2024, and probably clear around 9.5 or so million in cap space that way. You can always restructure the contract of Alex Highsmith and clear, you know, another 7.2 million in cap space at some point down the road that way. But those are things to worry about on another day there. The way I look at this right now, there's plenty of room to work with. There are going to be new additions in free agency here moving forward. However, I think we are kind of past the line in the sand of a big ad, you know, of someone, let's say, with a APY of greater than 9 million, Could you do a player or two along those lines? Absolutely, you could. There's nothing that says that you can't here, but it feels like with what's left on the board and the market values and where they're at cap-wise, it feels like it's going to be more modest deals moving forward for the Steelers. And as part of that, we know this team likes to sign a few guys, veterans, along the way to those veteran benefit deals. Much in probably the same instance as this Van Jefferson deal is. So I'd expect to see those as well too. So I think you could see four or five more people come in the door here between now and the end of the compensatory free agent period, which is the Monday after the draft here. So they're not done.
And some potential re-signings. Chandon Sullivan, maybe he comes back on a cheap deal. Miles Boykin, potentially. I'm a little less confident in predicting that. I think it's kind of a coin flip, but that could happen as well. We will talk about Mike Williams here in a little bit and see what his market value is. Probably under that $9 million APY, but we'll discuss that just a little bit later in the show. Obviously, reworking this contract, clearing that cap space is a positive thing, an improvement if you're Pittsburgh and from a cap standpoint. Does this make you feel significantly better about the Deontay Johnson trade, or is this kind of more a marginal thing in your opinion?
Well, I think what you have here now is at least the two players' values, cash values, being the proper cash values. You can look at it that way, and then add on top of it, looking at it as how significantly better did one room get and how significantly worse did the other room get? Those are two separate arguments overall. The one argument is, look, you traded a guy that is Deontay Johnson worth $10 million cash in a single season? My answer to that would be yes. Is Dante Jackson now worth $6 million in one single season? I would say yes to that. So at least now, to me, was Dante Jackson worth $10 million, a little bit more than the $10 million in a single season? My answer to that would be no. But now I think he has the proper value. I think if you want to look at it as proper player cash value representation, those have been worked out properly now. Now the separate argument still remains what we talked about right after the trade happened. How significantly better did you get in one room and how significantly worse did you get in the other room?
Right. That's fair. Yeah. I think the values have aligned. I still think Pittsburgh lost that trade because to me, Johnson at $10 million is worth more than Jackson at $6 million, but the deal is the deal in Pittsburgh, obviously with roster bonus that was upcoming and maybe Johnson just wanting out. Was lacking some of the leverage, great receiver class in the draft, and some of those things were factoring in against them. Does this, I know you've kind of been a little more downplaying the idea than I have. Do you think cornerback is still a possibility in, say, the first round or at least, first, second round? I know there's other needs at center, wide receiver, but does this move change that equation in your mind at all?
I think with Dante Jackson now in the room, and obviously we'll see how the rest of free agency here. If there is a guy that you got that you like and you got to have, in the first round that plays corner, I don't think there's anything that prevents you from taking him.
I agree, especially a free agent after this year. Again, my thought is that Jackson can be a fine number two corner opposite of Porter, assuming that he continues to travel with top wideouts. Jackson will be serviceable. He'll frustrate. He'll give up some negative plays, but, he can do that job well enough. But after that, you're probably moving on with from Jackson after the 2024 season, which there's no one in the hopper to replace him. No internal young guy that's coming up. I mean, we'll see on Darius Rush and Corey Trace Jr., but they're mostly unknown and dart throws right now. So obviously, again, big needs at center and wide receiver as things stand right now. But corner, I think, is still a need in the slot. I mean, it is nothing there. So they have to address that, preferably before the draft starts, to have something before they go into that 3-day weekend.
And history tells you that they will put more Band-Aids on this thing, right? So to kind of protect them from having to go into the draft at said position Look, if a guy like Quinyon Mitchell's there staring yet number 20 for whatever reason, and he checks all the boxes for you, that'd be hard to turn down, wouldn't it?
Sure, absolutely. To get a corner like that, if you could have Mitchell or a top corner, whoever that name is, and Porter for the next 5+ years, you're in a really good place.
Right. So, and once again, why all this happened, how much of it revolved around Deontay Johnson maybe wanting out of Pittsburgh, or, you know, just, you know, you're wanting a different kind of receiver in that room. You know, we might never know the complete answers to those questions. So the argument at this point, the analysis at this point for that trade between the Panthers and the Steelers should now come down to it's less about the cash value of the players. It's just what you think about what you did to both of the rooms.
Yeah, it's just the players themselves as opposed to the financial aspect of their value and how they're being paid out. So that's the update on Jackson. Be sure to check out the post that Dave has that covers the salary cap update on that restructure, reworking of that contract and where Pittsburgh sits today. It's up on SteelersDepot.com. Sunday, by comparison, was a quieter day for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but not a completely quiet day. We found out Sunday evening the team has scheduled a visit with former LA Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams. He'll be coming in sometime later this week. We don't know the date. He's with the Jets today, so we know he's not in Pittsburgh today. Also has a meeting scheduled with the Panthers at some point this week as well. So again, timetables, not entirely sure. What's your reaction, thoughts to Omar Khan potentially taking a fairly sizable swing, potentially, at wide receiver?
Yeah, look, I mean, when his exit from the Chargers, I think a lot of people probably saw coming there, coming off of the ACL injury that happened in week 3 last season. You go back and you watch the replay of that. It's kind of hard to see what exactly happened, but you know, most of the internet doctors were able to kind of guess that it was an ACL there. If you think in totality, it hasn't been, I don't think, even 6 full months since that ACL happened. The official transaction sheet when it came to the Chargers letting Mike Williams go kind of predictably listed him as a failed physical. So there's still time involved remaining in his rehab. But as we've seen over the years with players with ACLs and MCLs and stuff like that, that timetable seems to be around 9 months, anywhere from 9 months to I guess a year overall. So long story short, one would think that he should be able to be ready to go by the start of the season. Whether or not he's ready to participate in OTAs fully, who knows? I kind of wonder, because we're coming up on the 6-month mark with him since he had his initial injury, and because he is now on the market officially, you know, as a street free agent, I kind of wonder if teams that have interest in him are bringing him in at least initially to get a look at where he's at in this rehab overall. Now, does that mean that he can't sign? No. I mean, if the deal's right for him and whatever, you know, he could potentially sign, especially if the team likes where he's at from a medical situation there. So the question is what is his value right now?
Which is, to me, really tough to figure out. I hadn't given it a ton of thought. I was going to kind of let you carry the conversation here and what that number is. Is it a 1-year prove-it deal? Is it he's trying to get that one last long-term contract around 30 years old? Obviously, again, the ACL complicates things. The injury history overall complicates things. What's your standpoint?
It feels like it's under that $8 million mark, you know? Look, I mean, he is a talented, contested ball catcher, can get down the field. He is, however, coming off of that injury and because of his age on top of it, that's going to you know, carry some concern with it. The Steelers, Here's the thing. Let's say his average yearly value is more than $6.5 million or more than $5.5 million at this point. As we've seen in the past, the Steelers typically would like to do 2 year deals or more with a guy like this. So let's say his value is $7.5-8 million. You know, I would think that the Steelers would try to do a 2 year deal with him. That way they can give him $7 or $8 million in cash in 2024, yet make his cap number significantly lower than that. It just feels like his cash value for at least 2024 is somewhere between $6 and $8 million.
Okay, that sounds reasonable, and you're right. I mean, if it is going to be, you know, a decent salary or average, you know, yearly value, then Pittsburgh would want to do 2 years. Does Williams want to do 2 years? I don't know. But putting the for a moment,
he'll turn 30 in October, by the way. So, you know, that's another thing to think about. And once again, he is coming off that ACL, so his value is going to be tampered down a little bit, but I mean, he's still a very talented wide receiver. And look, when he talks about fit, what, 6'4", what is he? 218, 220, something like that. I mean, you can visualize him fitting in what Arthur Smith would like to do with this offense.
Yeah. Big bodies, someone over the middle, that definitely fits. Outside targets for somebody like Russell Wilson, who likes throwing on the outside and had big receivers and Sutton and Jerry Jeudy last year. So those things aligned. And Williams was playing really well before the ACL last year, like 19 catches in three games for a bunch of yards and a touchdown or two. I think the concern, and I'm not concluding anything, the guy hasn't even visited yet, much less signed, but I think there is a school of thought. If you have one kind of, you know, just categorizing him broadly, jump ball, you know, go up there and get a kind of guy in George Pickens, you need another in Mike Williams. And if you replace hypothetically Johnson with Williams, who's kind of your short area quickness, yards after the catch, three step game type of receiver, I think Pittsburgh had the setup of you have your Z receiver in lines blur. I know they're not just static, but you had your jump ball downfield threat in Pickens, and you had your kind of traditional X receiver in Deontay, somebody that could create space. Do you want two guys that are just, you know, more contested type of players, or do you want to kind of have that different flair and different archetype at receiver where you have your more, you know, traditional route runner and your, you know, George Pickens and somebody that's going to be more your vertical threat, contest, win the jump ball type of receiver?
Well, I guess the question there is, you know, with Pickens is, you know, can his route running continue to increase and you get more kind of stuff out of him? And, you know, he played some X at Georgia, right? So how much better of an X type, you know, short area guy can he become?
I mean, he can, and he did improve. I think his route running, he was used in the slot more. He moved around more last year. His yak improved by leaps and bounds. He's one of the worst yak receivers as a rookie and one of the better yak receivers as a sophomore. And so there's certainly development in his game, but he's never going to be that quick twitch type of guy that Deontay is. Like, I guess the question or the concern would be, is it a little too redundant to add Mike Williams when you already have George Pickens?
Well, I think the thing here is can you have too many good physical receivers? And I think the answer to that is no.
Okay.
I understand a redundancy, but also too, we still got a draft. You know, once again, this goes back to right after Deontay Johnson was traded. You know, we need to evaluate this room after the draft and after free agency. So I think this is more of a big picture question than it is a week by week.
Sure. Yeah. Again, we mentioned after the Deontay trade, there's a totality aspect. You want to see how the room looks as a whole. And so you don't want to conclude on, you know, how much worse they got a receiver until you actually see the final picture, or essentially the final picture. We'll say, just call it, you know, early May, once the main bulk of free agency and the draft is all concluded. So we'll see. And then there's the injury history, obviously. I mean, he hasn't played a full season But once in his career back in 2018, he's had recurring back issues. As you get older, those probably don't get better and probably don't just go away. They probably keep recurring in the ACL now. And so there are, you know, just availability concerns with Mike Williams.
Right. Sure. And that's what's going to probably play into his market value as well. So, I mean, we'll see. I kind of wonder if we'll see actually Mike Williams sign a contract this week.
Right. I mean, I think you're on the money when you
say with any team, you know.
Right. I think teams want to get the idea of where he's at medically right now before they start to really talk contract and just kind of see where he's at with his rehab and recovery. Because, yeah, I mean, as you said, ACLs, I mean, heck, some guys, I'm not saying this will happen with Williams, but some guys have come back within 6 months from an ACL tear. Right. Remember Amari Rodgers, Clemson. Did that. And so the timetable is no longer that full calendar year. Now there's a separate conversation about getting confidence in your knee and really feeling like yourself again, as opposed to just being truly medically cleared. Those are different things. And that's typically a longer timeline. But yeah, I mean, in theory, he could sign with the Jets today if he wanted to, if they gave him a great contract. So there's no guarantee he even gets to Pittsburgh, but we'll see what happens and keep you guys posted.
And there's nothing to say that he can't get to Pittsburgh and the deal be right. They get it done. You know, right. So it's going to be, we'll see what by the end of the week, what happens with him with these visits.
All right. Good deal there. Let's go back to Justin Fields. Obviously, we had the emergency podcast over the weekend discussing the trade and the value, and nobody can dispute the great value that Pittsburgh got. There's been some more reporting that kind of gives an indication of why Pittsburgh got him so cheaply. Reportedly that Fields and his camp wanted to go to Pittsburgh. And so other teams that were interested, up to four, maybe five other teams who were calling Chicago about Fields, essentially Fields' agency was saying, we don't want Justin to go there. We want him to go to Pittsburgh. And Chicago, despite having reportedly better offers to send him somewhere else behind more established long-term franchise quarterbacks, turned down those opportunities and did right, quote unquote, by him to send Fields to Pittsburgh. So that appears to be one reason why the cost was so minimal. Now, I'm assuming that other teams were not offering a second round pick. I'm sure their compensation was not dramatically better than what they agreed with in the Pittsburgh deal. But point being, that seems to be the way that Fields got to Pittsburgh, was he wanted to go to the Steelers and Chicago said, okay, we'll send you there.
Not surprising at its core, if indeed it all went down like that. I mean, you circle all the way back to the pro day and Mike Tomlin, and you have to think if Justin Fields was sat down and asked point blank, or if he asked, you know, specifically asked to go to one team, I don't think it's hard to fathom that. Man, send me to Pittsburgh if you can. You know, send me to play for Mike. Especially him seeing, you know, the aftermath. Pickett sent out the door, and Russell Wilson and his age, and not only that, as we talked about in the last podcast, you know, him saying right after he drafted that he models his game after Russell Wilson. Why wouldn't you want to go to Pittsburgh to get the chance to redeal, potentially revitalize his career?
For sure. If he was not going to have the chance to start anywhere, then you want to go to the place to be the best backup possible and be in that optimal situation and behind Russell Wilson on a 1 year deal. Yeah, Pittsburgh may want to do an extension with him after the season, but they're going to let this year play out, and who knows what will happen from there. So yeah, for the stability of Pittsburgh, the connection with Mike Tomlin, that made a lot of sense overall. So that's kind of just clarifying some of the reasoning and rationale of how Pittsburgh got Fields for a really minimal cost.
Look, I don't know how you could take issue with what they had to give up as part of this deal. And you get to me, the more I look at the tape and all with him, the more I think of all the young quarterbacks that have switched, you know, been traded this offseason, he seems to have his overall game seems to be the most salvageable.
Yeah, the upside is immense. And I've been digging through the tape a bit more yesterday, and I have an article up this morning, a film room on the best of Justin Fields and the highlights and kind of the upside that we talk about. I will have an article in a day or two on the worst of Justin Fields. It talks about the things he has to work on and the rough edges of his game, but certainly at his best, the arm talent's there. Even some of the processing, I think, has improved. He was better down the stretch, and Chicago was able to win games and finish the year stronger. He was sacked less often. And obviously his ability to create with his legs, extend the play, both as a scrambler, and then somebody just kind of, you know, being able to run and pick up yardage is really special. It's really like him and Lamar was the two guys that can do that at that kind of level, just really be able to create and turn a what seems to be a clear negative into a really big positive play. So that's what they have to work on. And he can sit there and learn and watch Russell Wilson and hopefully have some good teaching and be able to work on those aspects of his game.
What would you say are the three most encouraging aspects of Justin Fields' game at this point?
I mean, again, from a pure arm talent standpoint, I think he can make every single throw. There's no question about that. And even little things like him being comfortable moving and throwing to his left. I think Russell Wilson and many right-handed quarterbacks struggle more to the left than to the right. I think Wilson loses his accuracy when he moves to the left. And Fields, to me, his accuracy overall is not as good as Wilson's, but to the left, I don't see a significant drop-off. But just pure arm talent overall. Obviously, the mobility and the ability to create with his legs, the design run game, again, how defenses play, how they have to account and really be plus one in the box in the run game because they have to account for the quarterback run threat and how they have to play more zone coverage against you. That's an element as well. So it just his mobility, his athleticism, the arm talent. And then for the third thing, I'd have to probably think about that some more. I'd have to probably sit there and chew on maybe that third tangible trait, but I think he shows some touch. I don't think it's all arm. It's not just fastballs. I think whenever he has to take something off of it and throw down the seam or throw over a defender underneath zone defender, I mean, I think he can do it. So you've seen moments where the arm talent's not just in terms of arm strength and velocity, but showing touch. And I think when he doesn't look to bail, he can stand in the pocket and take a shot. I think he's a pretty fearless dude in that respect. Now, there are times where he will sense pressure and start to drop his eyes and start running around, get himself in trouble. But there are many clips of him standing tall in the pocket, taking a shot and still being accurate doing so. So I think there's a toughness to his game as well.
All right. Yeah, look, the arm talent's there. The mobility's definitely there. This guy's going to bust off. Still has some, you know, if given the opportunity to play, he's going to bust off some runs on some people. That aspect of him is not going to go away. Once again, as we've talked about in the podcast the other day, you'd like to see him in plays that call for him to play within structure, do that, get the ball out a little bit quicker. I think he's got a good one. Once again, there were times, especially I think in the second half of the season last year, where it looked like the light was coming on for him a little bit there. I agree with you. I think he does have a touch aspect of him. I think his accuracy is probably better or improved as the season went on last year. I think overall his accuracy is probably better than his career accuracy numbers indicate. I have not looked at his adjusted completion percentages and all like that. I know that he did have some drops, you know, last year by some receivers and all like that, that obviously hurts his completion percentage over there as well. But, you know, there is still some ups. It's up to the Steelers now to make him work within what they want to do without trying to take the core. Cause some things you're not with him and Russell Wilson, there are some core aspects to their game that you're just not going to be able to eliminate. And even circling back even further to what you said, if you can just eliminate the lows on both those guys, you know, and make the lows not so low while developing a more mid aspect to their games, that will help immensely, I think, overall.
Who do you think that's more likely to happen with? Because Wilson, he's been doing it his entire career.
Fields,
the guy's 35.
Fields.
Like, but Fields is also like he can get away with it more because he's still younger and can make those crazy plays that Wilson was able to do in his prime, but he probably can't do anymore.
Put it to you this way. One for one, I could see Russell Wilson being the more frustrating quarterback to you.
Okay. I think Fields is still going to frustrate more, but he's going to he's going to frustrate you because he's going to wow you so often too. And it's going to be like, can we just bottle that more often and avoid some of those negativity? Like, I mean, when he's on, he's on. He's fantastic. But the accuracy can wane so much, and the decision-making from time to time can wane as well, and some really head-scratching decisions. And I think to just kind of preview the negative, I mean, they both have issues of bailing on pockets and trying to do a little too much with their legs, but Fields will really, his tackles will frustrate him. Or I should say that the tackles will be frustrated by him because his drops, he just gets stepped, he drifts, and I think he really makes life tough on an offensive tackle to protect, because he'll change that junction point and really make it an impossible angle for the tackle to block and pass pro.
Yeah, that's why if you can get him to be more on rhythm and more on the shorter drops, you know, 3 to 5 step drops, and get that football out on him, out of him on time, that will help immensely. Look, you know, we're not going to paint this thing anything other than it is, but I do think that if you can get him to play within structure more, without, you don't want to tell this guy if it's not there, you know, if it parts like the Red Sea on you, go, you know.
But how do you teach it? How do you walk that line?
Yeah.
It's a fine line to walk.
Yeah, it is. And also, you know, the more you get a quarterback to take off, the more you worry about him getting hurt and all like that, you know, taking a pop he doesn't necessarily have to take. But I mean, without a doubt, I mean, some of the electrifying pluses that he's had so far, just, I mean, you go back to, you know, the Cordell Stewart's name's been thrown around. Remember those 55, 70 yard scampers that he had, you know, with him. The highs are really high with the electricity with him, and throwing the ball down the field as well too. I mean, he's with him extended some plays. He's had some nice extended plays.
That kind of brings me to a discussion I wanted to have with you today. It's been talked about some. Do you carve out a specialty package for Fields and try some either red zone stuff, short yardage stuff, or do you have him as a traditional true backup?
Look, the more you can give an opposing defense to think about, you know, the more you try to do that, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think – how do you think Russell Wilson would handle that, you know, 4 snaps a game with Fields coming in on the field?
I can't say for sure. I think he would be okay with it as long as the rules are defined and clear. And I think Pittsburgh is doing that. You're hearing the reporting saying that Wilson is our starter as soon as they made the deal for Fields. And I think that's comfort for Wilson to know, okay, I'm not looking over my shoulder immediately, that I'm the starter, he's the backup. That's how the division of labor, how the depth chart will look. But to answer my own question, I'm with you, Dave. I think you should use him in some of these specialty ways. He's too talented to sit on the bench the entire season. If Wilson were to play every single snap, I don't want Justin Fields having 0 snaps.
Right.
There is an asset to be had there. And as you said, something else for defenses to prepare for. Now, exactly how often and how you use him, you can discuss that. You go into training camp and kind of see where he's at. But I think obviously you could be looking at, you know, short yardage, goal line, red zone, got to have a tight moments, occasional change up. Maybe you're opening script, you throw in a play like that, where it might be a, you know, almost treated like a wildcat package where he's, you know, but obviously can throw and do more than just run. So I think you have to utilize that talent because you don't want that guy sitting on the bench the entire season.
Yeah, the element of surprise in the NFL and giving defenses something A, they didn't plan for, or B, something showing them something early in the game where they think, you know what, we got to change this up because if this, you know, if you know, any element of surprise that you know, to me is a plus in the NFL in today's day and age, and especially when you got a guy as athletic and it's not like he's inexperienced either. So yeah, I'm all for it as much as possible.
And even if it's not surprise, in some ways, I may want to make them plan for it. I may want them to dedicate practice time against scout team dealing with this package. And maybe I won't even use it that week. They don't know. Maybe I'll use it for one play. And so they're going to have to, you know, on practice time that's pretty limited with the CBA rules, a couple hours a day, a couple days a week, is I want them to take a period to deal with this potential package and make them dedicate time to film study and planning and practice reps and have less time to plan for our base offense. That's a win for Pittsburgh as well.
And the only way you do that is putting it on tape.
Sure. Yeah, you will have to certainly show it. But if you can tease it some, you know, and you can get some plays off of it, then defenses will have to account for that and respect that.
Right.
So we'll see. That'll be the conversation. Is there any downside to this Fields trade? The only one, and again, some people have thought about it. And again, we're just musing and kind of hearing the reaction is, what if Wilson were to struggle? Is there going to be a quarterback controversy? Will there be calls for playing Fields? I mean, there's always calls to play backup quarterbacks. They're often the most popular man in Pittsburgh, not always in the NFL, not always in Pittsburgh, but that is maybe one potential consideration of, okay, you have a really talented, you know, at his best type of backup. If Wilson were to falter, do you have this outside noise about, you know, this daily discussion, who's your starting quarterback?
I mean, the short answer, that's obviously yes. I mean, if Russell Wilson comes out and has a start to 2024, you know, I don't want to say exactly like, but, you know, similar to, you know, Mitch Trubisky in his first season, there are going to be calls, put Fields in there, especially if you're not scoring points.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously if there are turnovers in there, I mean, if you're in games and you're even if you're losing games 19-17, without a doubt, especially if you can draw it right to, you know, mostly being on the quarterback play, you're going to get those. Look, this is without a doubt, this is Russell Wilson's team right now, but if he struggles, you are going to hear the calls to get Justin Fields in there.
Is that a concern, though, or do you just think that's the cost of doing business when you have?
Yeah, 35-year-old quarterback and a still young former first-round draft pick that's had some electric plays. It's part of the NFL now. Yeah,
sure, I'm with you. So I think Pittsburgh's mind is, yeah, that could happen, but we're not planning for that. We're not planning for failure. We're planning to make this thing work, and that's going to be our approach. And we're going to go with that optimistic approach as opposed to this, what if it all goes wrong type of lens. It's not how teams, you know, trying to build their team with the intent of, you know, maximizing and making things go well and having some confidence. So it's a fair point, and it may be October and we're having these conversations, and it may be something we write about and talk about endlessly. Hopefully not, but I think it's the risk that you have to take.
Here's the thing, and boils back to what we said, you know, the other day there. I don't know how this is going to play out with this quarterback room in 2024, but I tip my hat to them doing something with that room. Because as we said going into the offseason, and Rooney said, and way back at the end of January there, you know, quarterback play has got to improve significantly if this team wants to compete. And they just didn't sit on their hands here this offseason. And quite honestly, when is the last time that you've been this excited, at least to see what the end result is when it comes to the Steelers quarterback room?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of something new, I mean, we're just not used to this kind of radical change and this upheaval and all these new names and notable names in there. I mean, obviously, there's been excitement, you know, in Ben's prime for just, okay, we have Ben, you feel like you have a chance. But in terms of something new to that room, it's been, you know, I mean, I was excited for Pickett last year. I mean, even after the summer, because it was a really good summer, I was really optimistic. And obviously that did not, you know, that optimism was not lived. But to this degree, it is really exciting.
I tell you, I know you think highly of Ben Solak from mm-hmm. The Ringer. Does absolutely amazing work, and I've been kind of following his thoughts from last season on through all this season up until and past where we're at right now with this thing. He has been pretty floored by the fact that, man, you telling me that all the Bears could get was a conditional sixth round draft pick for 2025. He's I think significantly higher on Justin Fields coming out of last year and his future than most people are, I think. And he's a really level-headed analyst overall, mm-hmm. You know, so for him to have a flag kind of planted in the ground when it comes to Fields and thinking that, in so many words, the Steelers got a steal here. I think that's worth notating.
Sure. No, Ben does a fantastic job. And I think even if you're not as high on Fields as he is, you can't be mad at the return. I mean, what is the risk here? I mean, the worst case scenario is he's your backup. You send a 6th round pick next year. Even if he were to leave and go sign somewhere else, I mean, you've hardly lost anything. You've lost a 6th round pick in 2025. It is worth the risk. Now, again, I think the reporting indicates that Chicago could have gotten more had they, you know, not listened to what Fields was wanting and hoping that would happen of him going to Pittsburgh. Again, I don't think they turned down a day two pick to go send him to Pittsburgh for a conditional 6th round pick. I don't know what the other offer was, but it is worth noting there probably was something a bit better out there. But yeah, I mean, I am surprised, generally speaking, that no other team viewed him, Fields, as a even kind of potential starter. It feels like every team was evaluating him as a backup. And I wonder why that is. Is it because just there is more, there's been so much quarterback movement this offseason because it's a good quarterback class and the top three teams picking in this year's draft all have quarterbacks? Is that why maybe Fields' market was not as active? Or is there just a concern about the turnovers and negative plays, the fumbles, the inconsistency that makes them hard to trust as your week in, week out starter?
Right, right. Are the real lows in the roller coaster ride able to be eliminated,
or at least reduced? I don't think you'll eliminate. There's going to be part of his game that just, you know, it's comes with the territory of it. I think the answer to that question, you know, why was the league lower on him, is probably a combination of both his play and then the other quarterback options available and where some of the quarterback needy teams are slotting, you know, like Washington, New England, et cetera. So it's probably a combination of both, but it did surprise me to some degree that no team really even seemed to have much of an interest as adding Fields to even maybe compete for a starting job, including Pittsburgh.
You talked just a little bit ago about Fields under pressure and all like that. Next Gen Stats just posted Justin Fields threw 9 touchdowns while under pressure last season, just 2 fewer than now Steelers teammate Russell Wilson. Fields and Wilson will now headline a Pittsburgh quarterback room that had just 3 touchdowns under pressure in 2023, which tied for 3rd fewest in the NFL.
Yeah, again, I think under pressure, when he hangs in there, when he's not kind of running and scrambling around and he just hangs in there, and because the arm talent is so good that he can make those plays. And I have a couple of those clips in my film room, and there's a ton more. Even things like red zone play, and there's a bunch of variables to that. But I had the stat late last night, and you've talked about, Dave, that Russell Wilson's been so good in the red zone. Fields and Wilson last year combined for 31 red zone touchdown passes. Pittsburgh had 5. I mean, it's just like a comical difference there. Again, there's opportunities and just, you know, having chances to do that. And Pittsburgh, you know, run heavy team. They want to punch it in with Harris and Warren. So I get there's some context to be had there. But I mean, for a red zone offense that has been in the 20s for what, 3 straight years, you need to get that better. And you're going to just have more. I guess you have to be able to throw for 20 passing touchdowns as a team at the minimum to truly be a competitor and be able to potentially contend. You can't throw 13 touchdowns on a season and expect to go into the playoffs and beat the Mahomes and Allens and Lamars. It's just not sustainable.
But wait, there's more. Here's more from Next Gen Stats. Despite starting just 13 games last season, Justin Fields ranked top 5 in scramble runs, 46 of them, yards, 384 of them, touchdowns, 4, and rushing yards over expected plus 104, a full football field. The Steelers gained the 6th fewest rushing yards, 127, and the 5th fewest run yards over expected, minus 16 on scramble runs last season. So that highlights the mobility. And it's a Captain Obvious, I guess, mm-hmm. but it's there it is in writing for you.
Yeah, it's good to have the stats, but we know he can run.
Right.
And obviously, as the backup, we don't know how many opportunities he will really have to drop back pass and scramble. If Wilson gets hurt, then obviously the equation changes a lot. But the bottom line to me, Dave, is we talked about this on the emergency podcast, is your quarterback room, the most important position in sports, has gotten better.
Right.
And the cost and the risk to do so is about as minimal as it can get. I mean, it's a veteran minimum contract, 1 year for Wilson. It's a conditional 2025 sixth round pick for Fields. I mean, that's nothing. It's peanuts compared to, you see some of the desperate and kind of reckless decisions other teams have made in the past, or even getting quality quarterbacks like a Kirk Cousins. You're committing long term for serious money to that. So there's a risk inherently in that. So Pittsburgh has made themselves better while reducing risk as much as possible. Is it perfect? No. Are there questions? Absolutely. I don't know who the starting quarterback of 2025 is going to be. Maybe it's Wilson. Maybe it's Fields. Maybe it's somebody else. We're going to have to find out. But at least there is an improvement for 2024 to begin pushing that ball forward.
Agreed. Did you get that put into your dating app profiles and all?
I should. I have not. I should do that. I'm sure the women will be blowing up my phone if I do that. I'll put in those next-gen stats. I think that's what women want. They want next-gen stats on Justin Fields' rushing yards over expected.
What does this do to your overall thoughts on the Steelers' potential to get into the playoffs and win at least one playoff game?
Well, even when I said when Wilson signed is what I think this move does, it does not make Pittsburgh Super Bowl contenders. I don't think they're there. Now, again, we want to see the entire offseason process, and who knows what else Omar Khan will do. He's been full of surprises, and there's the entire draft to go through. So the roster is not done for any team, but also obviously not Pittsburgh. But what I think it does, it gives them a good chance to win a playoff game. And I do really think that's what's fueling this team to make some of these more radical moves is – again, the frustration, the angst, the impatience, Art Rooney's comments about, you know, we have not won a playoff game in 7 years. And I think that's one reason why they're really trying to just do something kind of radical and different to get some radical and different results, which hopefully will include a playoff win. Now, I think Fields just kind of happened. Again, they had been researching him and studying him, but, you know, if Pickett didn't win out, then Justin Fields is probably not a Steeler right now. I don't think that would have happened. I think it still would have been Pickett and Russell Wilson. But once, you know, Pickett was unhappy and he wanted his exit, then that opened up the door for Pittsburgh to go down that Fields path again. But again, I think Pittsburgh has been more aggressive in that pursuit of finally getting over that hump of winning a playoff game.
I still wonder, even if Pickett doesn't exit, if they still might have gone down this path.
It's possible, but I think less likely overall.
Okay.
I mean, that's a Captain Obvious statement, but I mean, if the cost was that, again, I wouldn't have blamed the team for doing that. If you would have gotten, you know, Fields for the same compensation, which I assume that you would have, a conditional six-round pick next year, and even if Pickett was still in the fold, I'm good with that. But I mean, I think obviously once Pickett went out, they needed a backup quarterback, and that's when the talks really begin to accelerate.
All right. What do you have? What do you have come next on the film room on Fields?
I'll have a worst of Fields where it's going to show again, him drifting and getting far too much depth, which makes him tough to protect. Like, you know, Wilson and Fields both got sacked a ton last year over the last 2 years, I think for different reasons. For Wilson, his drops are fine. He just will start to bail and spin and do some of the things that were frustrating to watch from Pickett last year. For Fields, there's a bit of that too, but his drops are just far too deep. And he'll take a, you know, five step and then he'll step back. He's like hitching backwards instead of hitching forward and climbing. And that's creating a lot of the pressure that the tackles, you can't blame them for. They're in an impossible situation. So I'll have a worst of on him, and then I'll do something small on kind of the hidden factors of his legs in the design run game and how that influences defenses and kind of force them to adjust and account. Josh Kearney will also have kind of a more, you know, dedicated design run game schematically, some things Pittsburgh could potentially do with Justin Fields. So there'll be some run game aspects coming up as well.
All right. Where shall we go from here?
I know we've talked about it already on two podcasts, but I never really asked the question, and I meant to, Dave, about Kenny Pickett There's a lot to discuss, a lot to unpack here, but just to ask a very big question, what went wrong with Kenny Pickett? Was this just a misevaluation of the talent? Was this him not having a chance because of lack of either good scheme, personnel around him, the Matt Canada factor? Where did it all go? Like, when you do the autopsy on Kenny Pickett of his Steelers career, what is the cause of him no longer being a Steeler?
Yes.
That's probably the accurate one.
I think it feels like it's all of the above.
Is there a driving factor, or do you think it's distributed evenly between he just wasn't as good as they thought, or the coaching was the issue? Can you break it down at all?
Look, I think some of the things that you go back and you remember him having on tape of bailing out of those pockets never went by the wayside there. Now, however, there were the moments, the game against the Jets, and there were certain kind of turning points where you thought, okay, maybe, standing in the pocket, delivering that pass against the Jets over the middle and taking the hit there. But there was just not enough. He did not make enough strides overall. That's why I said yes, because I think schematically. But look, how many times did we point out where it seemed less on Matt Canada and Kenny Pickett not pulling the trigger on certain window throws that we feel that he could have made? The arm strength was never there. Overall, that, and I what I mean by that is down the field distance wise with velocity. I thought that Pickett did show that he could make those throws from far hash, the 15 yarders to the other sideline and all like that. I don't think that was the issue. They never could get him really to operate more outside or inside the numbers. Overall, I think that was one aspect of his game that you probably came into it kind of wondering if he could be that middle of the field player and give you that aspect of it. And then the whole, bailing on the pockets and not trusting the pockets and getting himself in trouble that way on top of it. Look, once again, there are several elements to it. Quarterbacks in the draft and evaluating quarterbacks is far from being a science. And it's rare for any single quarterback to not come off the board within the first 20 picks of the draft. And the fact that he was the first one off the board in that draft at 20th overall, along with that you look back at that class now. And it not great at all, right?
Sure. One of the worst quarterback classes ever. It's tracking towards.
So this was the team, I think, trying to take a shot on a player that they felt that they knew quite a bit about and figured that they could work with overall, and it didn't pan out.
I think that's well said. And yeah, I mean, to your point, when you joked and said yes, that is, I think, largely true. To say there's only one factor or just one or two factors about why it didn't work is too short-sighted and too just convenient to say. If I could just kind of point out the biggest factors, though, they viewed him as a really highly accurate quarterback, and I just don't think he's been that kind of guy. I don't think he was as accurate as they thought in hope that he would be. They painted that as kind of one of the biggest traits that they saw in Kenny Pickett, and I just don't think he was that kind of guy. Deep ball accuracy
and his maturity, which ended up, sure, you kind of wonder, did he handle all this right?
I mean, if you're Kenny Pickett, though, just to put ourselves in his shoes, can you understand his frustration, though, of feeling, sure, like he was, sure, not been given the opportunity? I can understand that to a degree.
Sure, he probably feels like they set me up to fail here.
Right, right. So, how well, do you handle that? Yeah, we don't know all the details. It doesn't seem like it was handled totally well, but that's a different discussion for maybe a different time. But I think the accuracy, the lack of it was an issue. I think certainly one of Pittsburgh's organizationally, one of their largest mistakes was not firing Matt Canada after the 2022 season. They had kept him for 2023 for this continuity value of let's not have our quarterback have two OCs in 2 years. But you see where it got them. You're firing Canada midseason anyway, and you never feel like you could really properly evaluate him with a better scheme and better coaching and better game plan overall. And so Pittsburgh really hurt themselves by not making that tough decision, which really wasn't that tough, but in the sense of, okay, we're going to have to go find a new OC and kind of change things on the fly after 2022. That was a mistake. So I would say those two things of many other factors, but those are the two largest mistakes of why Pickett did not work in Pittsburgh.
Right. And look, I mean, Justin Fields has got his warts as well too here. But you know, at the very least, I think if you want something to, you know, to hang your hat on, to at least where there has been some progression, at least in his game. And look, his overall adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat is still 4.77 for his career, which obviously is not great and is right around Kenny Pickett's number for Kenny Pickett's first 2 years in the league there. At least Fields did see a jump in his number from four. He went from 4.63 adjusted net yards per passing attempt in his second season in 2022 to 5.29 in 2023. Still not great at all. Still needs to be over that six number, but at least he did make the jump in the right direction as a whole, where Kenny's jump wasn't, you know, as noticeable from his rookie season to his second season. Now, we're talking about two seasons versus three seasons here. Could Kenny Pickett have made the jump from what his number's at now to let's even say 5.5 in 2023? Well, even if he had, that wasn't going to be enough.
Sure. I mean, that's not a number that you can win with and win a Super Bowl with.
Right, right.
So that's my thoughts there on Kenny Pickett. It just, I think there were elements where there was a misevaluation of him. Maybe that one great year at Pitt was just a really great year at Pitt. And he had what, Jordan Addison that year too, correct? And I'm sure that, you know, helped. Not that that's the sole reason why Pickett got better. He just was, you know, went back to school and matured. And maybe there was a health issue the year before. I can't quite remember, but I you know, they built him as this really accurate guy. He wasn't a terrible, like, he's more accurate than Justin Fields, you know, more consistent, I guess, but like his accuracy to me was average. The deep ball was decent. I think the short intermediate stuff was kind of below, like it was average at best in terms of his accuracy. And I think below average in that area. And like, I look at a CJ Stroud, and his one reason why he had such a great rookie year in Houston was he was just this highly dialed in precision passer, and Pickett never has been, I don't think, and probably never will be that type of guy. So that was a misevaluation from a scouting standpoint. And then from a coaching development standpoint, again, I think holding on to Canada was a really poor decision.
Right. I agree. And that's why I started off with just saying yes to begin with. There's a lot of layers to the onion here.
Yeah. I mean, again, you joke when you say yes, but there are plenty of elements to this. It is not just one reason. Does the organizational failures with Pickett, does that concern you when we're talking about trying to develop somebody like a Justin Fields or maximize a Russell Wilson? Is that a concern about how the team will approach handling quarterbacks going forward?
Well, I mean, you got new people in that room too now, you know, so
you do.
We're just going to have to wait and see it play out. I mean, look, ideally, if things have gone the way you think that you hope that you've done it properly this year, then Justin Fields is not going to play a lot of snaps this year. But
true,
if he does, the true answer there will be if Justin Fields has to get on the field for a large amount of snaps for whatever reason here. But you know, I think you have at least set him up where the notion is this is Russell Wilson's team. We're riding with Russell Wilson. Justin can take a step back and work on areas that he needs to work on. He's got a veteran who he modeled his game after to kind of learn from as well too. And sometimes maybe standing on the sideline a little bit will help a young player.
Yeah, there's certainly value in that. I do wonder how they intend to evaluate Justin Fields this year, assuming that Wilson stays healthy and Fields maybe gets some specialty package wrinkle stuff where it's more run heavy and throws the ball 30 times or so. I mean, with him, assuming his fifth year option is declined, which I'll call a pretty safe bet right now. He'll be a free agent after 2024. How do you evaluate his future, potentially try to retain him when he's barely played in 2024?
I think that'll be stuff that we don't see, the eye raising in practices during the week there, right? Oh, Lord, Justin had a hell of a damn practice, today, and strings those things together. I think that's where you get your comfort at running the things that you want to run with him as the backup, and the things that in practices that we don't see, and word kind of filtering out of, man, Justin Fields is having some great practices with the Steelers.
Yeah, but I mean, does that mean you sign him long term? Do you call him a starter if you feel like you move on from Wilson? I mean, right now, the quarterback situation, generally speaking, at the top is settled. It's Wilson and Fields. But once the year ends, we're back talking about, okay, who are you going with? Is it how good of a year did Wilson have? Are you going to extend him? What's his value? Is it worth it for his age and the money for Fields? Is it, okay, we don't know much about him externally, in-game action in 2024. Do you do something with him? Do you just call it a one-year rental? I mean, this conversation it's not over. It's been paused. It's Wilson and Fields, but we're starting this conversation again as soon as the 2024 season ends.
Alex, a lot of people ask sometimes or tell us sometimes on this show and on the site in general, you guys don't talk enough about, you guys are great about talking about what you think the Steelers will do. You guys don't do enough of talking about what you would do. So I'm going to put on my general manager hat there.
Next to your tinfoil hat, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't pull this one out.
A little dust on this one.
Right. At this point, if my evaluation, if I'm very, very comfortable with my evaluation on what Justin Fields has done through his first 3 years in the NFL, and then going back to what my pre-draft evaluation on him was as an organization, if I'm very comfortable with that right now and feel that there is indeed that my organization and coaching staff and Tom and everybody top to bottom can unlock more of the upside to Justin Fields, then I do my damnedest from here until week one of the season to see if I can get some sort of an extension done with Justin Fields that at least locks him up through the 2025 season there. Now, do I go out and pay him $18 million yearly average as part of the deal? No. But I think there's some sort of happy medium there where you can make him happy as far as guaranteed cash. Because look, once again, there's no guarantee that he's going to play 100 snaps in 2024. And thus he would hit the market kind of in the same situation that he was traded this offseason. Well, all we have is the tape from his first three seasons there at this point. Does Justin Fields want to run the chance of changing teams yet again and having his value questioned and being locked into another one-year deal, let's say around $5 million or what have you, to be a potential backup NFL, or does he want to take kind of more guaranteed money right now up front, add another year of his contract with the notion that, look, the guy that I'm backing up in 2024 with the Steelers might not be here in 2025. This might be the team. This is a team that I want to be with. If I'm Omar Khan, I am calling Justin Fields and his agent from here on to week one to see if there's anything that we can do of extending this deal where it's great for both sides here. That's what I'm trying to do. If I'm Omar Khan, and especially if I'm very, very comfortable with what I've seen from the first 3 years from him, in addition to what my pre-draft analysis was on him, plain and simple, that's what I'm trying to do.
I get the thought, and if they could do that, more power to them. I can't see it as more than a 1 year extension, because if you're Fields, you can't lock yourself down that long. And if you are going to do that, you got to get paid handsomely for it. And I just have a tough time. And I've been wrong about this stuff before. I didn't think what Trubisky would get an extension when he got an extension. I just have a tough time seeing the benefit from Fields' perspective, not knowing if he'll be the starter in Pittsburgh or if they're going to hold on to Russell Wilson.
Well, look, what if, you know, he's scheduled to earn what, a little over $3 million. What's the exact number that just
3.2. I think he's got that roster bonus due in the summer, 1.6, so 1.6 base salary. So somewhere around there,
he is due a total of 3.233, almost, you know, 0.5, you know, 3. Let's call it 3.233 million in 2024. What if you were able to put $8 million in his pocket this year? In other words, what you would do is you would lower his base salary down to the minimum, make up the rest of it in a signing bonus, where you could essentially keep his cap number about the same. All right. Mm-hmm. But you put more cash in his pocket in 2024, and then his year next year is something around $7 or $8 million. In cash.
If I'm Fields, though, I go to you, the now GM of the Steelers, and say, what's my role? What's my plan here in Pittsburgh for this year or next year? Right now, I know I'm the backup.
Well, I tell you right now, well, look, you know, it's to be determined, Justin, but us doing this thinks that we have confidence that you could potentially be the starter. We can't guarantee you it, but, mm-hmm. but we're making a good faith cash effort here up front by paying you even more in 2024, where our plan is for you to not take even 100 snaps. That's our good faith effort to you. We're investing in you, because if we don't think that you could be that guy, then we just gave you $7 or $8 million in 2024 to be a backup for the full 2 years.
Sure, but he wants to play. Like, I know, sure. The money's good, but he wants to play. So if I'm Justin, I'll say, I'll talk to you after the season ends, and I'll evaluate my options. And if I want to do a 1 year extension and re-up with you guys for 2025, then I'll do that next March. But I'm not going to lock myself in right now without knowing how this season plays out for myself, for Wilson, and for the organization.
Sure, and that should be the side that the player and the agent takes on the other side.
Right. There's almost, and this will sound weird, but there's almost in a weird way a Mitch Trubisky comparison, because you have a failed, you know, unsuccessful overall first round Bears quarterback, goes to be the backup for a season. Everyone loves the backup. You're going to get glowing reviews from a stable organization behind an established starter, Josh Allen in Buffalo, Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh, you know, with a potentially, I know it's a very, you know, far lens and not crazy about these kind of predictions, but supposedly the 2025 quarterback class is not projected to be great. And I think it's one thing hurting Fields this year's market was the 24 quarterback class is excellent. Very, very good. Think about Trubisky in 2022. He got some interest because that 2022 quarterback class was poor overall. And so if I'm Fields, I say, yeah, maybe I'll have some more opportunities next year. Someone will inevitably need quarterbacks and the class next year is not looking great. Maybe I will have more options. I'm in Pittsburgh, back up for a year. They'll talk about how great I was in the locker room, how many strides I made. Maybe I'll get a chance in 2025.
Sure. Yeah. And look, once again, your side is a valid argument to this, but if you want to ask me what I'm trying to do, if I'm the Steelers at this point, that's what I'm trying to do with him.
I get it. If they can do that and lock him up, fine.
And there is a happy medium in here somewhere. I think what that happy medium is financially, term length, and all, you know, obviously yet to be seen. But mm-hmm. but do remember that the risk on his side, on Justin Fields' side, is he only plays 100 snaps, and teams are still wondering, man, is this guy, you know, is it worth going out and paying him big money on a or even that medium quarterback money, you know, because look, if you pay him over X amount, he's got to be your starter.
Yeah, right. And then what happens with Wilson? If he has a good year, it could get messy on Pittsburgh's end. But I mean, I get your point. The market was clearly down on Fields. And so the concern from him is, if I don't do anything this year, will there be that much more interest in 2025? That is a stance that you can argue.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but that's what I'm trying to do. If I'm Omar Khan and the Steelers, if I'm convinced that he's salvageable and can potentially be a better than average starting quarterback for my team in 2025.
If you did an extension, my last question on this, if you did an extension, do you think you could get it more than a 1 year extension, or do you think 1 year is that year that you could get him to agree to?
Yeah, I think the 1 year, because he's going to want to, because his thought process should be, okay, I'll do this, but if I reach the potential that you guys think I can reach, I want that big bite of the apple after the 2025 season.
Yeah. So I think if it were to hypothetically happen, I think it'd be a 1 year thing. They did that with Rudolph, obviously at a much lower number, but that was kind of the thought. Because yeah, there was a concern that you have, you know, as of right now, no quarterbacks under contract for 2025. Now you could pick up the option on Fields. Do you think they'll do that? I'd be very surprised. I know I've been surprised by so much, but I'd be very surprised if that happened.
And we're revisiting a previous conversation. I mean, at its core, it tells you they should not, will not do it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's an uncomfortable place to be as an organization, even with the intent of doing something with Wilson after the season, to have nobody under contract for 2025, I think gives you a little bit of anxiety.
It would be, and once again, we took the devil's advocate role of that. You know, if you did do that, it would be a high dollar gamble to do that. Then it goes back to how confident are you with your pre-draft evaluation and what you've seen in the first 3 years to go out and give them that 20. If you're doing that, though, Russell Wilson's going to look. He's going to he's going to get whiplash with his neck turning around to see what you did there. Sure, and then sure. and already you've had Russell Wilson come out and say, kind of envisions himself being in Pittsburgh past this season. So he's going to wonder, what are y'all doing over there? Because you're not going to pay him, well over $20 million to be a backup in 2025 there. So that, to me, that sends the wrong signal to Russell Wilson if you did that on top of everything else.
Yeah, I agree, which is why I think I find it highly unlikely that occurs. But the deadline will come up here pretty soon, and we'll get our answer before the summer really begins.
And once again, the happy medium here, believe it or not, I mean, with what you could give Justin Fields as part of a 1 year extension in cash for 2024, you could keep his cap number right the same, or just slightly increase it some on top of it. So it all comes down to how much cash investment as an organization do you want to make in him in 2024. But yeah, on the flip side, you do have to wonder, you know, what that base salary will be, and can that base salary in 2025 as part of a 1 year extension work as a backup salary? So that's where the happy medium comes in with this. But that's what I'm working towards if I'm Omar Khan.
Yeah, and if you do that, and if you do re-sign Russell Wilson, you're going to pay a good amount of money for that. I don't know what that number is going to be, but if he has a good year, you want to bring him back. Your quarterback room that's very inexpensive right now has gotten very expensive for 2025.
Right, but if the outcome is greatly increased quarterback play, can you put a price on it?
No, it's totally worth it for sure. But just things to think about when you're trying to plan out what next year could look like.
Right.
All right, good conversation there. I'm sure we'll talk about more of this throughout the offseason and more stuff on Fields. anything else that we're missing here, Dave? Got a bunch of pro days today. We'll keep you updated on that. I think Iowa, I think Miami are the two biggest ones. Is there any big pro days later this week we should keep an eye on? Toledo's is tomorrow. We'll see on Quinyon Mitchell there. Alabama? I said March 20th for oh yeah, it is. Yeah, because Georgia was last week. Yeah, Alabama will be on Wednesday. Texas. So yeah, a couple big pro days coming up.
All right. Have we missed anything else that we wanted to cover in our 45-minute pre-podcast production meeting?
I think we're good. We will have a live stream tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time. We had joked the last time we did one of those that things might be very different. We came back to the next live stream and how true those words were. So that'll be fun tonight. But if we miss anything or anything else to talk about, you guys can catch us on YouTube at 7 p.m. Eastern time tonight.
All right. Shall we get to some reader emails to close out the show?
Yep. Let's get to some emails and close out today's show.
We'll start with Joe here. Glusco. This sounds like a new name here. Let's see. Hello, Dave and Alex. Joe from York, PA here. I have two questions for you. Do you think Justin Fields will be in Pittsburgh past next season and into the future? My fear is that they decline the fifth-year option and Fields leaves to pursue a starting job elsewhere, and we never see him get a chance in Pittsburgh. This is obviously assuming that Russ is a starting quarterback all year. Before we get to number two, we pretty much talked about number one, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we covered that pretty well.
All right, here's a good number two here. This one is for Alex. Mm. How are the dating apps treating you? The listeners would like an update on your search for Trevor Cazorla's mother. Thanks, guys. Love the show, and I'm looking forward to your draft discussions. Give us an update on those dating apps, Alex.
This Alexa in disguise, she always messages me and texts me about my dating app stuff. I really don't have not been on there. It's been a busy week. If you guys hadn't noticed, it's been a crazy week for this site. I have truly not even been on the apps in quite some time. Tried some other things. It's all been unsuccessful though. So Trevor Cazorla, he will have to probably wait a little while longer.
All right. Chris Lookhart writes saying, good morning, fellas. I have a question. I put on my tinfoil hat and cannot figure out why it doesn't make sense to me. When I listen to all of the interviews with Russell Wilson, he talks like it is not one-year deal, but plans on finishing his career in Pittsburgh. I got that vibe when he interviewed with Missy Matthews. Why do so many people think Justin Fields is the future if Wilson is talking like he wants to be here long-term and he's doing it openly? You can profess your goals and what you want to happen all day long. I don't discourage Russell Wilson. I don't take issue with Russell Wilson doing that. If I'm Russell Wilson in my head, and if I think I can play five more years, I want everybody to know that I think I can make this thing work in Pittsburgh. I think I can get this team not only in the playoffs, win a playoff game, but make a Super Bowl run within this 5 years as well, too. I want to profess that out there. I want people to know that. Now, what the organization thinks and what I'm sure the organization would love nothing better than Russell Wilson to have a fantastic 2024 year where it puts the onus on the organization to re-sign him. So, but at its core, these are words coming out of people's mouths.
Yeah, the actions will tell us everything. And Pittsburgh reportedly had an opportunity to do a two-year deal with Wilson whenever he had met with the team. After he met with the team, he called Pittsburgh, some other teams, and said, would you guys be willing to do a second year, maybe a player option type of situation? And Pittsburgh reportedly said, no, we want to do 1 year minimum and let the year play out. And so, yeah, if you're Wilson, you're confident in yourself. You expect to do well. You expect to succeed. And it's probably just good even because he knows he's now kind of the leader and kind of the guy. And so how you talk and act, you don't want to give the vibe of this is my stopgap. I'm here for a year. If you're trying to build something, you don't want to feel like you're going to leave it here in a season. And he probably wants stability and not be the guy that bounces around place to place over the end of his career. So yeah, if you're Wilson, you're going to have that approach, but you let the entire year play out, see how he does and go from there.
All right, we got one from Philip A. here from Rancho Cucamonga, California. That is the first time we have said Rancho Cucamonga, California on the podcast, I'm pretty sure. Congratulations, Philip. Hey, Dave and Alex, wondering if it's possible Fields comes in off the bench mid-game to give Steelers different options on fourth and short or red zone, similar to Taysom Hill last year. We talked a little bit about that during this show. I think, and as we came to the conclusion, I think there should be situations in a game where they get Justin Fields on the field, and maybe not necessarily in fourth and short or red zone opportunities, but sometimes even in between the 20s as well too. I would advise them to do so for all the reasons that we mentioned earlier in the show.
Yeah, again, I think it'd be a waste of his ability to not use him at all. Now, there's a line of how much and how you want to implement him, but I think certainly you have to explore some packages to get him on the field and utilize the talents that he has. He's an immensely talented player, and you want to have – I mean, again, Pittsburgh has not really had that possibility since the Cordell Stewart days. It's a unique wrinkle for all the reasons that we talked about and mentioned. So, yeah, I think you want to explore that.
All right, this one's from Justin. It's titled Arthur Smith and the Bobs. Hey, Dave and Alex, after complete makeover of the quarterback room, do you think Tomlin secretly regrets hiring Arthur Smith? The Smith hire brings in a simpler run-heavy offense that was more tailored towards Pickett's assets in an attempt to develop him. Smith's offense has a ceiling, in his opinion, that will hinder the team from going deeper in the playoffs, and a three-year contract is a long time. Lastly, with Kenny Pickett gone, can someone check on football justice? Yeah, football justice is about as useful. I mean, football on a stick is a lot more useful than football justice.
Heyo.
At this point, Justin, look, I think at least what we think Arthur Smith's offense is going to look like, with it being run heavy, should help guys like Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. Personally, I think you want more run based offense. And look, what is one of the things that you go back to the Arthur Smith coaching clinic and talking about play pass was the exact words, and talking about using the mobility and of the quarterback and rolling them out on play pass and all like that. No, I don't think that Mike, if anything, I think he's even happier at this point because I think Justin Fields and Russell Wilson share a lot of the things that you want to collectively work on those two, on the things that they need improvement on. I think Arthur Smith can help in that area personally.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think he's worked with some quarterbacks in the past in Tannehill and been able to build those guys up. I see, you know, I think at a baseline level, similarities between the Broncos offense and how it was structured and run last year under center, a lot of play pass, condensed splits. I think it's comparable to what Arthur Smith runs. There are differences. You probably will see more, hopefully see more middle of the field throws in Pittsburgh under Smith. And you saw last year in Denver with the more outside receivers again, in Sutton and Judy. But I'm assuming that Pittsburgh has had this thought about Wilson for a while now. We knew he was done in Denver. It wasn't a surprise. And so I bet you Pittsburgh, you know, had at least a thought and aspiration of signing Wilson when they went to hire Arthur Smith and what that would look like. And so I don't think, you know, Fields is a maybe new name to that equation. They maybe weren't planning about potentially getting as much as they were Wilson. But for the reasons you said, I think it can still fit. So no, I don't think there's they needed and they wanted an experienced guy who's been in that room before and had success. That was their criteria. And really, regardless of who the quarterback is, that was the important thing, which is somebody that can competently do the job and has proven that before, to not only call the game, but to manage the staff throughout the week in terms of film preparation and game planning and delegating and just running the room. All the Monday through Saturday stuff is just as important as the Sunday actual game planning and calling. All Sunday is a product of the work you put in Monday through Saturday. And they wanted somebody who would work hard, has proven they can do the job, And that's why Smith was the guy.
All right. Well put. Todd Gensler writes in on Wilson and Fields. Can't believe the crazy week of non-football we've endured. Wow. With Wilson and Fields having very similar playing styles, won't that make the offensive schemes a little easier? This is a completely different take here. Offensive schemes a little easier for Smith. How will Smith utilize these quarterbacks, their playing style in his offense, and will he excel based on this or need to change some of his past coaching style? Todd, I think that just an extension to kind of what we just talked about there.
Yeah. Again, some of this is we'll see. You need to get these guys in, start working with them, kind of really get to know them. You know them to probably some degree. Smith, you know, was getting to know Fields in that pre-draft process. And so, I mean, you kind of lean on some of those things, but you have a whole offseason and OTAs and spring work and mini camp to try to, you know, figure out what works best and what they're comfortable with and how to tweak things to your scheme. I think Smith is probably going to be open to he's not, I don't think he's a super rigid guy where it's my scheme and you have to run it exactly the way that I want it. I think in Denver last year with Sean Payton was a bit more, this is how we're doing it. You got to do it my way. There's pros and cons to all those things. But again, there's time here to get these guys in, work with them and see how to best approach things.
All right. One last one from Austin Hackett here, rookie offensive tackle. Happy Dave. Hey, Dave and Alex, happy to be emailing you guys something non-quarterback related. How do you two think the Steelers would handle a rookie first or second round pick at right tackle this summer? I think they've got themselves in somewhat of a bind, he writes, because they probably want a right tackle specifically so Broderick Jones could go back to left. So say you draft Amarius Mims. How do you think Tomlin would approach that position in training camp? You saw how reluctant he was to plug and play rookies as starters last year. Broderick wasn't a highly experienced tackle coming out of Georgia either, but he certainly played more than Mims, he says. But does that mean Broderick stays on the right side to start the camp and potentially the season? Tomlin's said Moore can't play right tackle, hasn't he? He says, just curious what you guys think. Austin, look, let's say you did go with a guy like Amarius Mims here. I think you have to at least be open to their seeing. You've got to see enough of Amarius Mims. You've got to put him in a situation where at least he can compete for that right tackle job to some degree. And on the flip side, let you see Broderick Jones over on the left side some. And then I think you just see how it goes there. Long story short, I think you go whoever it is, even if it's not Mims. I think you've got to at least be open-minded to let that player at least compete for the right tackle job, and then let the tape and the practices speak for themselves. And then if he's not ready, if that player's not ready, then you go into the season with Moore as your left tackle, Broderick Jones as your right tackle, and then the natural process, you would think at some point the rookie will play at right tackle and Broderick Jones will go over to left tackle.
No, I think that's said well. I mean, you can't be the Steelers and say Broderick Jones will eventually move to left tackle and then draft a right tackle in the first round and not even try to move Jones over at left tackle in training camp or in OTA. So what are you doing at that point? You're just kind of a rudderless ship. You have to at least try it. Now, I think, if you took, say, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of a name. Who's one of the more experienced right tackle? J.C. Latham, for example, he's got more experience than Mims. Then I think it's an easier conversation to have. I think with Mims, the concern is the lack of experience. Is this guy even day one ready? There's some questions there because he's played 870-something college football snaps. It's not much of a resume. There's talent there, but there's not the experience. And so are you less comfortable doing that than a three-year starter at right tackle? Yes, but I think even all the same, if you're drafting a guy in the first round, you're comfortable enough taking on that risk of that lack of experience in the first place. And so, yes, there'll be some things to work on, but you at least have to try it. And if you have to revert back, Moore's a hard worker. He's a professional. He'll be ready to go at left tackle. And I think Jones is cut from a similar cloth and he can go back in at right tackle. So short answer, I agree with you, Dave. You have to at least try that to start. And if it doesn't work, then you go back.
Right. You at least have to have the open mind of letting that rookie compete for the job.
Yeah, but I think that, and that what that means to me is getting those first team reps and mm-hmm. kind of maybe throwing him into the fire a little bit, which his team I know was more hesitant doing with Jones last year, but they had more options last year. They had more, they had a core for, I mean, right now you're kind of, you know, I think you're a little more desperate to try to figure out your tackle situation and you do want to get Jones over. At least I want to get Jones over to left right. tackle. And whatever I have to do that, to at least explore that, I'm going to try.
Right. And you know what Dan Moore's ceiling is now. So you have that variable that you can use as part of the process.
Agreed.
All right. We got to a lot more reader emails this show. Apologies if we did not get to yours. Resend them if you keep resending them. Keep them at the top of the list there if you think they're still pertinent and we haven't discussed the topic ad nauseum to this point. We will have the live. That ought to be an entertaining live stream tonight. We're expecting a record turnout tonight for the live stream. You can look for that on Alex Cazora's YouTube channel, and he'll be posting it on Twitter and all like that to give people a heads up about an hour out and all like that. So, we will, barring having to do an emergency podcast at midnight tonight, our next show will be on Wednesday. So in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter /X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button and follow the directions that way. We had a record, all-time record day for the site on Sunday, and we certainly do appreciate everybody that stopped by the site. We couldn't do it without you. Also, that last episode of the podcast is putting up extreme numbers on Justin Fields and all like that as well too. So we appreciate the listenership for helping us achieve those goals as well there. So until the next time, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.